Welcome to Honestly Haunted. Welcome back to Honestly Haunted. We're your hosts, Erin Grogan
and Abby Chowning.
This week, we're headed to Delaware for some political, alcohol-infused, and mysterious hauntings. We're covering the Woodburn Mansion in Dover, Delaware.
Woodburn Mansion today is known as the residence of the governor of Delaware, but it wasn't always that. The home was built in 1789 by Charles Hilliard III, and it was deemed one of the finest Georgian-style houses in the whole state.
The home changed hands quite a few times in its early years. The first people to purchase the home from Hilliard's estate were Martin and Mary Bates in 1814, and they bought the home for only $2,812.
What a bargain.
Exactly.
A mansion for $2,800.
Well, Mary was also actually Charles Hilliard's daughter, so it stayed within the family.
Okay.
And that probably,
I don't know why I guessed.
Helped. You know, that happened actually quite a few times. There were quite a few, like, changes of hand that actually stayed in the family.
Well, we could appreciate that.
It was sold again in 1825 to Daniel Cowgill, who eventually gave the home to his granddaughter.
The method for how he gave the home to his granddaughter is a bit convoluted. Basically, he sold the home to the parents of her husband for $1, and then the granddaughter and her husband lived there.
Which is just confusing to me. Like, why not just sell it to them at that point?
Must have been some sort of law or something.
Yeah, there must have been something going on there, but I just thought that was so odd.
Yeah,
So the home sold a few more times after that. A U.S. senator actually bought it in 1912. It was sold again in 1918. And then 1953, until finally, in 1965, it became the official residence of the governor of Delaware. And the first governor to live there was Charles L. Terry.
The home under state ownership underwent major renovations and was also open to the public for tours beginning in 1966.
The home has had ghost stories since some of its earliest inhabitants, and the ghost known as the Woodburn Ghost was first documented by the 1814 owners, the Bates.
In 1815, after only about a year living in the home, the Bates were entertaining a Methodist preacher by the name of Mr. Lorenzo Dow. At breakfast one morning while he was visiting, Mrs. Bates asked Mr. Dow to start the meal with a prayer, to which Mr. Dow asked if she wanted to wait for the other guests to arrive.
Mrs. Bates was shocked by this question because there were no other guests staying in the home. Mr. Dow said that he met a gentleman on the stairs, and he began to describe him. He wore a powdered wig, he was wearing knee breeches, and he had on a ruffled shirt.
Mrs. Bates told Mr. Dow that the man she had just described was her father, who had already died. Mr. Dow was not the last person to see Hilliard either. In fact, another later owner of the home, Frank Hall, claimed to have often passed Hilliard on the stairs, just the same way that Mr. Dow had.
Can you just imagine walking up and down the stairs and you're just like, "Hey, ghost.
How you doing?
Hey, Hilliard.
Sleep well?
Great wig. As always.
Nice breeches.
As always.
Women compliment each other's breeches.
I mean, some men.
I guess breeches has been turned into britches over the years, and britches I associate with panties.
That's fair.
Nice panties.
It is britches.
Aren't they called breeches, too?
They might be, I guess.
But we refer to it as britches, right? But, like, I thought the actual garment itself is called breeches. I got it. Breeches are short trousers that extend to or below the knee. Breeches are short trousers that extend to below the knee. When speaking informally, breeches is a term that may refer to any kind of pair of pants, but breeches are basically like capri pant short things.
Okay, so it's probably the same.
Well, for our purposes, yes, it is the same. I just got on a tangent involving colonial clothing, so.
You know, as one does.
So I'm in a mood today, what can I say?
So, Hilliard was a man who was known to enjoy drinking, and it seems that this carried on through his death as well. People began to notice that if any glasses of wine were left unoccupied, later the glass would be mysteriously emptied.
The first governor who lived in the mansion, Charles Terry Jr., himself reported to see Hilliard's apparition helping itself to a decanter of wine in the dining room.
Another governor's wife had reported hearing footsteps on the stairs during the middle of the night so often that it became normal.
Hilliard, however, is not the only ghost in the estate. In fact, there have also been sightings of a young girl wearing a gingham dress and a bonnet walking around the grounds. She often is seen carrying a candle and walking near the reflecting pool.
This young girl was actually seen by several guests of the inauguration party for Governor Mike Castle in 1985. Several of these guests actually report to have felt a tugging by an invisible force before seeing the girl.
Governor Castle also once invited a teacher and three of her students to spend the night in the mansion. We don't know why, but that's a thing Governor Castle decided to do. But all the students actually reported that a portrait of a lady in one of the rooms kept smiling at them, even though her portrait itself was not painted as smiling. Luckily, they all agreed that this felt like a welcoming and friendly smile rather than a sinister one, which is not always the case.
It's not always the case. I can think of very many sinister smiles.
We were raised on Scooby-Doo, and something looking at you in a portrait generally wasn't a good thing. Would not feel
happy.
Not happy.
Besides just being an old home, there may be more reasons for this house to have hauntings. This home was actually part of the Underground Railroad, and was a safe haven for escaped slaves traveling north. The 1884 novel The Entailed Hat described a safe haven called the Cowgill House, which was described to look very much like the Woodburn Mansion.
That's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that a house so far north in Delaware would still be part of...
Yeah.
I mean, well within Union territory. But that's interesting that it would be. But, yeah, you never know. Further, the Cowgills were a family who owned this property during that time period. Slaves would be hidden in the cellar until they could escape in boats by the nearby river.
Some visitors to the home claimed to have seen apparitions of slaves who appeared to be hiding or running. They claimed that they have seen these imprints of the days of the Underground Railroad being relived by those spirits.
So far, these hauntings have all been pretty benign, and some might even say friendly. That's true of most of the ghost stories of this home, but unfortunately there is some negative energy and a more sinister ghost here as well, though it isn't within the confines of the home.
This home, according to the 1884 novel, was actually the site of the infamous Patty Cannon raid in Delaware. Patty Cannon was an illegal slave trader, and she was a co-leader of a gang in Maryland and in the Maryland and Delaware region. Their activity was often called the Reverse Underground Railroad, so you can imagine the kind of deeds that they committed.
The raid was an attempt to kidnap freed slaves, and on the grounds of the home, there was a struggle, and the raiders fought hard to re-kidnap these people. There were weapons fired, and a very large struggle.
One story of this raid night was that Daniel Cowgill, who was a Quaker, drove the raiders off the land after some time, but one raider decided to hide in the poplar tree in front of the mansion, a tree that's still there now.
While waiting, presumably to catch slaves escaping, the raider actually slipped and his head got caught in a hole in the tree, and he was essentially accidentally hung from the tree and died there. He wasn't found until the morning when he was long dead.
We've talked a lot about energy in the past, and a place where that was both a safe haven and a site of a massacring of that safety is bound to be a place with a lot of energy. In fact, there are people who have claimed to have seen the ghostly apparition of this raider reliving their gruesome death in the tree.
Others who haven't seen the ghostly apparition themselves have claimed to still hear moaning, screaming, crying, and struggle, all seemingly coming from the tree. Which... that'd be so scary. Like,
yes.
Why is that tree screaming? Why do I... oh, yeah. You just meant, like, walking past it. That's a thing I think is really interesting about a lot of the haunts that we find in New England. Just because those seem... like, it is... at least as far as, like... probably just because, like, the foundations of America kind of, like, start... obviously, people were living all throughout what we consider America today. North America as a whole. But as far as, like, the civilization of America, just it feels like that's where, like, our oldest... buildings are in America, like,
yeah,
for us. And so there, when you visited other places around the world, like go throughout Europe or Asia, it's like there's like buildings and temples that are like thousands and thousands of years old. And so it's like that's as old as we get, like some structures like that are made in like the 1500s, 1600s, like that's about all we've got.
I literally saw a meme the other day that was like that was like tour guide in a house. This house is 100 years old. And then it was like Americans, and it was a shocked face. Like
100 years. Yeah, no.
100 years.
I think it just, yeah, just, we just think of America as like this teenager on the world stage. Cause it's like, we're all just, everything's just is so young in comparison to the rest. But this house gives me that kind of vibe. Like it's yeah. just through the beginning of like American civilization in that region, it's one of the older places. And so I just kind of associate that kind of age with these kind of stories to.
Well, yeah. yeah. I mean, and it was involved in some other major aspects of history too.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you were like a little surprised that the Underground Railroad went
so far north.
So basically, the Underground Railroad went all through the US because people were trying to get to Canada.
Yeah.
Because, all the time, but especially after 1850, the Fugitive Slave Law went into act,
right.
which meant that even free states in the North were required to give back freed slaves. So it wasn't safe in the North for escaped slaves. Even so, so especially after the 1850 law went into effect. That's where groups like the Paddy Cannon gang came into play because they were basically like vigilantes
and
in a way.
Collecting bounties,
like,
probably
exactly.
on freed slaves.
They would grab these escaped slaves and they would return them for money and
yeah.
they would literally get paid to recapture these people. Ugh. And so, yeah, really gross stuff. and they were violent about it too. And as you can tell, so, even though we were, like, farther north in this place, this was still, like, a major destination because, like, yes, they had gotten into northern states, but any one of them who was escaped was likely still trying to get to Canada.
Right. And, bless, I kind of had my dates wrong because, like, the Civil War didn't end until 1865. So,
yeah.
there was, like, obviously still people escaping slavery and needed safe spots.
Yeah.
So, interesting, though, that he was a Quaker. Like, how on earth did a Quaker chase off a armed
right.
gang
so,
from
yeah,
his property?
It's, you know, I feel like there's a lot of stories of Quakers being these kind of, like, heroic figures in,
yeah.
like, as from, like, the Revolution mm-hmm. even to Civil War and all that stuff. But you're right. So, if you're unfamiliar with Quakers, like, their whole thing is like no harm,
they don't own weapons,
they can't take up weapons, they don't believe in war
and because of their failing, like, they were not like they couldn't be drafted or something like that,
right.
like there's part of it
yes.
there's a component
yes.
that they didn't have to fight,
and they call everybody friend, like
yes.
you are friend Abby,
yes.
and they use like plain, what is it called, like old, like plain speech or something,
yeah.
thou
basically, like I mean, not too far into Amish territory, but almost like the like a simplistic way of living,
yes,
and very
however
peaceful. Yeah,
many Quakers during I know so I recently I was reading a book that had some of this information, and so it was a fiction book, but then in the back they had some like extra information about like the actual historical like context around that, and in the American Revolution, actually, there were a number of Quakers who, they were, in a way, they were kind of excommunicated from Quaker, there aren't Quaker churches, so, like, that's,
yeah.
they were cast out of the circle, or something. Basically, Quakers have, like, meetings where
mm-hmm.
they just, everybody speaks their mind and everything, but they were cast out of their little communities, basically, but it's because they joined the fight, not as fighters, but often as, like, other things. So they would be like, I believe in this, so I'm going to be a doctor.
Oh,
or
like a nurse
I'm going,
taking
yes,
care of
or like
one side.
A nurse, or I'm going to, I mean, I'm sure there were other jobs for,
right.
like, helping camps, and, like, basically being like, I am a Quaker still, but I believe in this cause.
Mm.
And so, and there were quite a number of people who did that during the Revolutionary War, so I've got to imagine
yeah.
something similar was likely happening during the Civil War, because the Quakers' whole thing is about speaking your mind and God moving you to speak to things and for things. And so Quakers very fundamentally believe that if they feel the Spirit telling them something is right, they need to act on it because it is what is right and it is coming to them through God. That's their belief. So I imagine that, like, Daniel Cowgill, being a Quaker who helped with the Underground Railroad, probably felt very, very
strongly
about slavery and about helping those get out of slavery. So I thought that was just kind of like an interesting little, like, historical tidbit, because it's something you don't hear a lot about, but was actually super prevalent in these, like, kind of really significant American
moments
in history.
I guess I'd just be curious, though, like, how I still have the question about, like, how did he fight off Patty's gang? Like, I just don't understand how.
I mean, if he lived in a mansion, one also thinks maybe there were other people there too who, like, were able to carry weapons, even if he didn't. Maybe he just kind of, like, led a thing, but I don't know. Apparently Quakers were also very persuasive, so maybe he somehow talked them out of it.
I don't know. That's interesting.
Yeah, Patty Cannon is also a weird person in general too. I don't know a ton about her, but I do know that, like, her gang was kind of, she was a co-leader with her daughter's second husband, which is just kind of weird to me. Yeah.
I saw, so it says, in 1829, Cannon was indicted in Delaware for 4 murders after the remains of 4 black people, including 3 children, were discovered on her property. She did confess to those murders and nearly, like, 2 dozen more, and then she died, actually, in prison. But actually, people think that one of her cohorts smuggled poison into her.
So she took her own life.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, she was not a good person. Neither was her gang.
And we'll post a picture of her on our posts, our Instagram and Facebook post on here, but she's, like, menacing looking.
But yeah, I mean, you've got to imagine if somebody like that, with that kind of reputation, was coming into a space and you were an escaped slave who was hiding and moments away from a boat that could potentially bring you to someplace safer, like, the fear there has got to be palpable, and that energy of that place has got to be such a mixture of, like, before her presence there being like, this is anticipating safety and freedom and all of those sorts of things, but then with her being there, that all of that being potentially taken away, and the fear, and
I want to keep talking about Hilliard, because I love that he, like,
the wine,
like, sweet Quaker man just boozing out.
He's not Quaker.
Cowgill was.
Cowgill was Quaker. Yeah,
scratch that. Never mind.
Hilliard was not Quaker.
So. Yeah, but Hilliard, just
as far,
like,
as I know, I guess,
just downing some drinks in between.
I even do as love a ghost. That he's just like, he's a ghost, and everybody's like, yeah, when he was alive, he really liked to drink, and as a ghost, he's just like, hey, guys, great wine.
Loved it.
Well, so apparently also, vintage wines had periodically go missing from the wine cellar in the house, and they often blame the ghost, which could or could not be, it could be like somebody who's like, they'll blame Hilliard for this. I'm gonna take this one.
They'll just blame it on the ghost. Sneaky.
But there was this funny image. So if you go to Woodburn's actual website, it doesn't have all the things on there, because it's a government website, basically, because it is the official residence of the governor.
Yeah.
But they do have this funny set of pictures of a glass of wine on the stairs, and then an empty glass of wine on the stairs. And they're not claiming that, like, that the ghost drank it or anything, but, like, it's just funny that it has been so permeated through all the people who live there, including governors, including political people, that they literally are like, one of the governor's wives would periodically put glasses of wine on the stairs just to see if Hilliard would drink them. Like,
I would do that too.
Literally,
in a
would
heartbeat.
Test it all the time, and, like, made jokes about it. How, like, she had to tell her husband that's what she was doing. Yeah. The governor of Delaware had to tell him, hey, I'm doing this. Don't drink the wine.
Don't,
like,
mess with me.
I'm testing something.
It's science. It's a hypothesis. Don't touch it. Because usually when you go to parties at someone's house, you, like, want to cover your drink.
Right.
This is the opposite problem.
Well, and the thing that kind of stands out to me about all of the haunting stories is the fact that I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like people who are, like, political people tend to not want to have stories like that surrounding them, or to say that they believe in those things, or that they've experienced any of that. But this place has, like, fully embraced that.
Yeah.
And the fact that the 1985 party was the inauguration party for Mike Castle, and people who were there, who were also presumably higher up political people or people who worked in that political sphere,
all claimed to have seen a ghost.
We saw a ghost!
Not only that, but, like, they touched or they felt something. I almost wonder, like, because they said it was a child.
Yeah.
I almost feel like that kind of childish, like, pulling on someone's pant leg. Yes. Be like, hey, hey!
Hey,
like,
come here!
Come here!
Yeah.
And it's very playful and, like, lighthearted and sweet. Although, back to Hilliard, right?
Yeah.
I had this image, though, of him, like, it's in a political house. Obviously, imagine that's the governor. The governor didn't start living there until what
year? Not until 1965. Senator lived there in the earlier part of that century, but it wasn't owned by the state.
The state. Because I had thought, like, if it had owned it during Prohibition, like, if Hilliard would have been like, this sucks!
I need this.
Yeah.
Like, don't take this from me.
Don't take this. This is all I've got. Don't take it from me.
I also love the fact that, like, the first time Mary heard that her dad was chilling in the house, she was, like, very shocked. But then it kind of seemed like the story just kept happening. So I feel like it seemed like at some point she was just like, yeah, my dad is here.
My dad,
like,
is here.
My dad lives here. That's he drinks wine. He hangs out. It is what it is.
He's usually on the stairs. I wonder what that, like, just the comings and goings, like,
in yeah.
And I guess I think of, like, in houses like that, now it's not uncommon for bedrooms, like, if it's a two-story house, for bedrooms to be on both floors, right?
Right.
But, like, in those days, most houses were designed that all living quarters were on the top floor.
On the top, yeah.
And so, I don't know, there's this kind of this imagery of, like, going...
Had a long night, going to bed.
Yeah, getting up, fell asleep by the fireplace.
Passing the night.
Passing in the night.
Yeah.
Gotta get up the stairs, but just, like, the comings and goings of, like,
a bustling
house.
And that, like, Frank Hall, who was not related to them at all, like, was like, yeah, it was very common. I would pass him on the stairwell all the time, like... Often, I can't imagine that. Like, just, I can't imagine having a ghost. Like, we've talked about some of our own experiences and things like that, but I cannot imagine having an experience where I legitimately was passing a ghost on the stairwell so often that I was just like, oh yeah, that's pretty common. That's a thing.
Yeah, I feel like it would catch me off guard every single time.
Yes.
And it's, I don't know, like, how would you talk to somebody about it? Like,
I mean, literally the only thing my mind can go to is, like, The Haunted Mansion. And obviously that's, like, a kid-friendly movie and it makes jokes about that and getting used to those sorts of things.
Although, but I watched it the other day just because it came on, it said fall movies or whatever on Disney Plus.
The Eddie Murphy one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's scary. Like, it's,
it is a little spooky, yeah.
Like, I was like, I watched this as a youngling. Like,
a lot. I mean, scary. Do you remember, like, Tower of Terror?
Terrifying.
Yes, I freaking loved it.
Me too. I actually watched it when we went to Disney World.
Really?
I watched it in the hotel, and the next day we went to Hollywood Studios, and we went on the ride, and I remember being like, this is so scary.
This is unrelated, but since we're talking about the Tower of Terror ride, there's a picture. You know how they take pictures on rides? Like, there is a picture from when I was, I think, like, 7, we went to Disney World or something. And I was so excited to go on that ride because I loved the movie. And I had watched the movie, like, a million times before going. And I was so excited. And it was really funny leading up because when you go into the ride, you kind of walk through the hotel first. And all these, like, Disney cast members are acting like ghostly hotel people and stuff, and my dad was, like, messing with them and was like, I'd like to request a room without ghosts. And they were like, they actually played along.
Oh.
Like, they were like, I'm sorry, sir, we don't have any of those available.
Like, oh, ow.
You know.
You goof.
But anyway, so
also,
like,
random piece of trivia, both of our dads are named Al.
It's true. It is true.
One of the chances.
And we get on the ride, and the picture, I'm hiding behind my dad.
You're just wailing.
You can't even see me. I'm literally behind his back.
Cowering.
I have fully hid for the entire ride. And it's hilarious. And
you talk a big game, Grogan.
It's so true. It's so true. And then we got a picture of us on the Tower of Terror ride a couple years ago. Me and my fiancé went to Disneyland Paris. And we went on Tower of Terror and we purposely bought the picture because
of those.
Like,
comparison.
The comparison.
You're going to have to put that in your, like, wedding slideshow.
Yeah.
Comparison. So, back to...
Tangent, but...
We're going to leave Florida for a second, go back to Delaware. Or Paris, wherever.
Where. Let's go.
but as we were talking, like, for the mansion itself. So, Woodburn Mansion passed through a lot of hands over years. Yes. But I did kind of... like that it passed to families or friends of families.
It would usually be like, it seemed like at least two generations of a family would have the house before it changed hands in most cases. Like, not all of them, but like it was, there was a pattern of like at least a couple generations have the house before it moves on to the next.
And I almost wonder if that is what has like created the not necessarily hospitality, but the more lighthearted spiritualness of the house, because it's like, if there's a familiarity to those who are there. So it's like, we might not like, but like, we're all family here. Like, families and like, not necessarily that they're all related, because they definitely changed a few times, but that almost wonder if like that helps
familial
the
atmosphere.
Yeah. I wonder if it like puts the spirits like at peace within the home.
Well, pretty much all of the stories are positive hauntings, if you can, I guess if you can call hauntings positive, but like...
Lighthearted haunts,
as we call them. None of them are negative except for the tree. But the tree is not in the house.
But it's, it sounds like that whatever, like, the death of the gang member out there, like, his death is almost, like, encapsulated in the tree.
Yes.
Which is really...
And it's kept outside of the home, which I also think is fascinating, because even people who said that they saw, like, escaped slaves, they're seeing them escape. And I'm not saying that everybody who escaped had a great life after that. There are still many hardships, I'm sure, but, like, but at the same time, if you're going to see a imprint or memory of the Underground Railroad, what better part to see than people actually being able to escape and
making
get freedom?
And it
being that chance toward freedom. And so it's interesting to me that, like, part of me is almost like the grounds, that tree in a way is like a barrier of like, there's this negativity, but once you get past that, it's positive.
Or if it's like protection, like the tree protected the people.
Killed the raider and it protected those
trapped the spirit almost within it too, which is something we haven't talked about much, like the idea that like haunted houses, like places where people die, seem to get trapped within the walls,
right?
So, but we haven't talked about something like in nature, if someone dies,
that's true.
And I mean, like I think of like hangman's trees, like that happens a lot, like the spirits of, especially like,
which this technically became
a hangman's tree.
Essentially, he hung himself accidentally. Mm-hmm.
But I think of like grounds where like lots of lynchings took place. Mm. Historically, they say like big amounts of energy are like held within those grounds and within the trees.
Yeah.
And which I just got chills like thinking about it. Mm. But like there's lots of reports, like lots of stories that I've read, like of people, especially like throughout the South, of people who visited locations that didn't know what the tree was, who have experienced
and felt immediate
either like just horrible like sorrow, feelings of sorrow or dread come over them being in those positions, and that's like, that was a hanging tree. And so I don't know, like that I wonder about trees. We haven't talked about like the ability
that
for something like that to contain a spirit or hold on to something like
And I'm sure there's a whole lot there's a whole lot of mythology and myth and belief systems about trees being alive. And
I mean, they are alive.
Well, yes, but
I know what you
mean. More like soul alive.
Yeah, and
like,
just like the idea of a root to going into
willow
the earth.
Trees and
yeah,
very interesting.
So I think that probably brings us to our verdict. I'm gonna say
honestly
haunted.
Yeah.
I always say that like, oh yeah.
I agree. For me, I think...
When she was, stop it, you're being too loud. She literally gave me, like, her lip is caught a little bit, so she's doing this. I'll kill you. That's what the face she's giving me right now. Look at her.
I'm not doing anything.
I'm innocent, Mom. Sorry. Okay. Yeah, I just think... I don't know. Like, there's just something about it.
For me, I think... it's some of the more contemporary ones that also push it over the edge for me. And again, I talked a little bit about the fact that, like, politicians generally want to, like, dissociate themselves from those sorts of things, but the fact that so much of it has just been accepted and, like, and embraced in a way, but just, like, a bunch of political business people at a party all say they saw the same ghost, and I just, I don't know, it just put some credence to it for me, I guess, and also, I like the idea of a place having positive hauntings.
Yeah, and I think it's almost, I think when we go over cases like this, it feeds into more of, like, my idea with how I come to terms with what ghosts might be, and as it more of, like, an energy source rather than, like, a soul left behind. Yeah. Like, that's just how I am at peace with the idea that it exists. Like, it's how I can rationalize it. And so I think for me, yeah, an energy imprint on a house, and for one to be, like, so vibrant and boisterous and funny and light.
Yeah, I like very it. Nice. It's yeah, like, it's nice to think about.
And it's almost, I think of it as, like, if for family members who have gone on, or friends, or the history of it, it's kind of like, their energy's here, and I like that. And that's, well, that's, like, what you would hope for, like, a family home, like, that's handed down.
Yes.
Is that the good memory or energy would stick around.
Also, and we didn't talk too much about this, but the fact that there have been glasses of wine that have just emptied without people drinking them is actually a very physical haunting for a ghost. And we didn't really talk about that too much, but that is a very tangible thing. It's not a trick of the light. It is not a, like, that is a tangible mystery right there.
There's something, like, metaphysical that occurred there, which I can't even begin to try to explain what that is.
and that fascinates me.
Yeah, I agree. Because, I mean, we do know of stories of apparitions or poltergeist or demon possession, like, of people physically interacting with other people for their harm. Like, right, like, scratch marks, handprint, like, bruises, things like that. Like, that, like, something that isn't physical has the ability to interact physically with us, which is not good, super
in
scary.
In angry ways.
In bad, not good ways. But the idea that something positive, or
just want some wine,
just a little thirsty,
just really like,
I just need one more drink. I mean, one more drink, and I'll go up the stairs and I'll go to bed.
I like wine too, buddy.
No judgment. This is a safe place.
Like, part of me just pictures, like, I was like, if in another life, if I ever became the wife to a governor of Delaware, I can just picture myself sitting in a kitchen in that house, pouring a glass of wine for myself, and then pouring one right next to me.
I would totally do that. Yeah, like,
same.
Night, boys.
Like, and something about that is just very,
makes me smile.
It does. It makes me smile. Yeah.
Well, I think we should go visit the governor, Delaware. Very important business.
So we can. The tours are currently shut down because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
However, presumably they will start up again. Like I said, like we said, you know, tours have been open since it became a state-owned home. Many state-owned politician homes do that.
Yeah,
the White House. Hello. I mean, like, all, like, you, they have their places of work and live that you may not always get access to, but you still can see some very historical things in the home, and it's a very beautiful looking home.
Yeah.
So I would love to visit and also potentially meet Hilliard on the stairs.
Anytime. Well, are any of our listeners from Delaware? We'll keep you posted on our visit up there at some point, but we'd love to grab a bottle of wine and we'll meet you on the stairs. But thanks again so much for listening, and we'll be back next week with more Honestly Haunted.
Thank you, as always, for listening to Honestly Haunted. Please follow us on social media at Honestly Haunted and consider becoming a Patreon supporter to help us continue to grow. If you haven't already, leave us a 5-star review. We'll be back with more Honestly Haunted.
Little monster.